Hello, Tech fans, and welcome in to episode 146 of the Tech Sideline podcast, originating from TSL's High Tech Studios in the Virginia Tech Corporate Research Center. On today's episode, we preview what could be a spooky, because it's going to be on Halloween, high-scoring game as Virginia Tech plays at Louisville on Saturday. Episode 146 of the Tech Sideline podcast gets started right now. So great to have you with us, episode 146 of the Tech Sideline podcast, whether you are watching live on YouTube or archived on YouTube, listening on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Amazon Music, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or on Stitcher. We are so glad you could join us today as we record on Thursday afternoon, October 29th. We've got our general manager and founder, Will Stewart, with us, our managing editor, Chris Coleman, the best producer in the land. Yes, he is. Malcolm Stewart behind the scenes. He's taking your questions. For those of you watching live on YouTube, we will read those off at the end of the show for Will and Chris. And I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes. This week and every week, the Tech Sideline podcast is presented by the Fisher Law Firm, Virginia's trusted DUI and traffic defense firm, dedicated to defending individuals charged with traffic-related offenses. The Fisher Law Firm handles cases throughout the Commonwealth of Virginia, and to date, the firm has defended tens of thousands of people charged with moving violations. For free consultation, call anytime, day or evening, toll-free at 1-800-680-7031. Again, that's 1-800-680-7031, or email the Fisher Law Firm at info@fisherlegal.com. Gentlemen, it is great to be with you as we stay dry from the rainy conditions that we've experienced over the last 24 hours in Blacksburg. It has been wet, it has been yucky, and it looks like it's the end of the good weather. And that's why Will is wearing a great-looking Virginia Tech pullover right now, protecting him from the rain.
The technical name is Wind Shirt, a wind shirt by a champion from Campus Emporium. As always, we'll drop the link down in the video description. Now, this particular item is $79.99, which when you first think about it, you're like, man, that's a lot. And then you put this thing on, and it's really nice. It's lined. The pockets are lined. The pockets have zippers. The letters are, like, really nice, really, you know, stitched on really well. And I'm warm over here, man. With this mask and this pullover on, this wind shirt on, I am warm. So if I just kind of do this. Oh, and we just had lunch, too. We just ate pizza, so if you see me kind of nodding off, just, you know, throw something at me.
You know, we also have a couple of other great Campus Emporium items that we have kept on the podcast set. For those listening, Will, you want to describe what we have decided to keep on the set?
Well, we're not going to keep them. This is the end of the October featured items, so I got to return them after this podcast. We got the Stein over here sitting next to me, which is $22.99. Very nice. And this is called a Heritage Banner, I think, that's hanging over my shoulder. And it's really cool, and I don't remember what it costs, but we'll put links to all that stuff in the video and check them out.
So, Will, you're styling and profiling, and Chris Coleman's over here wearing a very nice Tech Sideline shirt, by the way. Yeah. So, which you can get on TechSideline.com. So,
yeah, we need to promote the TSL gear. It's 50% off, but I can't remember the code right now, so let's do that for the next podcast. All right?
Sounds good. Hey, real quick, before we dive into things, I always like to have a little bit of fun before the show gets started. It is Halloween on Saturday, and you know, I was listening to Tech Talk Live the other day, the Fun with Foo segment that John Laser does with Justin Fuente. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the Halloween is a big holiday in the Fuente household with his three daughters every year. If you past couple years at the Cinnabon, that his girls have actually dressed up and people have given out candy. It's really neat. And I guess the football team actually engages with some of the younger kids of coaches. So I thought we'd start off the podcast today. I'm curious. I think the Tech Sideline viewers and listeners want to know, what was the best costume you ever wore for Halloween growing up, as a kid? Oh, I'm going to start with you, Chris.
I don't remember anything I wore as a kid.
Come on.
No, seriously, I don't.
You absolutely
No, as a child? No, I don't.
All right, okay, up to when you
Now, as an adult, ask him as an adult.
Okay, how about as an adult?
So the best one that I actually can remember was there were five of us total, and four of us were Ghostbusters, and one of us was Kenny Powers. And so, it was, I mean, there weren't five Ghostbusters. So.
You can't quote any Kenny Powers lines on the TSL podcast.
No, you can't.
I don't even know who Kenny Powers is. So,
anyway,
I do know a Ghostbuster.
So there was part of our group that like wasn't from Blacksburg. So like I went out a few days later and the bartender said, "Hey, Egon and Kenny Powers didn't pay their tabs the other night." So I had to pay their tabs.
There's a line you don't hear every day.
Well, I'm curious. How about you? Adult or as a kid growing up?
I honestly don't remember, man. You see, I grew up back in the 70s, and we didn't put any effort into it. You just bought the plastic mask with the rubber strap and slapped that thing on your face, and you took it off pretty quick because they were much like the masks we're wearing because of COVID. Those things were hot, man. Your face would sweat, and it'd start to stink in like 5 minutes, so you wouldn't even wear your mask. I do remember my brother one time had a really cool Space Ghost outfit. Space Ghost,
Coast to Coast?
Yeah.
I used to like that show.
Yeah, he had like the little wristbands that would do stuff.
My favorite character was Brock.
I never watched it. No. I just remember seeing my brother's Halloween costume. Gosh, I was like 4 years old. I remember where we lived, and I remember seeing it, and my little four-year-old brain just went, wow. So
there's some cool Brock videos on YouTube that you can watch.
All right.
Yeah.
There you go. Well, if there's anybody who wants to drop it in the YouTube live chat, what you're going to be for Halloween this year, or any good memories, feel free to drop it. Virginia Tech playing at Louisville on Saturday on Halloween. We've actually seen on social media this week, Louisville put out a really unique uniform reveal of like playing along with the Halloween theme, and Will's going to pull it up. We can talk about that a little bit later, but I think that'll be a common theme heading into the game on Saturday. Great to have you with us. Episode 146, Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. Hokies going up against one of the best offenses in the ACC, one of the most dynamic offenses. We're going to break down the Louisville offense, the defense. We're going to get game predictions from Will and Chris in just a little bit. But we begin the podcast today by going back to 2005 when Malcolm and I were in the first grade. The last time Louisville played Virginia Tech in football, the Gator Bowl, a 35-24 win for Virginia Tech, a physical football game, to say the least. Will, looking back on that game 15 years removed, what do you remember most about that game?
So I remember that, me and my buddy Richie Davis drove up to Harrisonburg and watched it. You were there?
Yeah. Sean Whitchurch was there. Remember?
Whitchurch was
there? I rode up with Whitchurch, and we all went to the basketball game, and then we went up to B-dubs.
Tech played basketball.
Yeah, we played JMU in basketball that day. I don't remember if that was before. I think it was right after the Gator Bowl.
Wow.
I think we played JMU in basketball in the old Convocation Center.
I always tell people I have trouble remembering a lot of the things I've done in my life, and I definitely don't remember who I did them with. I'll be like, "You ever see that movie?" And the person will be like, "I went with you." And I'm like, sorry. I was looking at the movie, not you. So it was me and Chris and Sean Whitchurch, and we went up to Harrisonburg with Richie. And I think Richie's wife is from Harrisonburg, and he had to be there for Christmas or New Year's or whatever. So that's how it wound up being there. And do you remember where we watched it, Chris? It was in
bar. It was a wing joint. I don't know if it was B-dubs or just a random one.
I can actually remember the layout
me
of
too,
the place.
Yeah. I can remember. And I guess the Gator Bowl was a noon game. And then I think we played JMU basketball probably like 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And we went to the basketball. And what I remember about the basketball game was in that old Convocation Center, you actually had to – the players had to walk up a stairway to get to the locker room. Like the stairway was in the arena, and you could just watch the players walking up the stairs and then going back. It was a very odd layout. I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It
was different.
I liked that arena.
The two teams were ranked something like 13th and 17th or something like that.
Virginia Tech was ranked 12th and Louisville was ranked 15th.
So the Gator Bowl is a big deal back then. That's a good matchup. And Tech struggled for most of the game. And I remember thinking they were going to win anyway. You know, it's just a matter of time. And that game is generally regarded as an embarrassment to Virginia Tech. A Jimmy Williams bumped a ref and got thrown out, and you know, he didn't aggressively bump, and it just kind of happened.
Yeah.
And Marcus Vick, of course, stomped on Elvis Dumervil, and isn't that? I don't think that's what did Marcus in. It turned the tide against him, right. And then didn't he get busted?
It was a few weeks after that when I think the whole
– he was driving to or from home, and he got pulled over.
It's hard to remember everything.
Marcus did.
Yeah.
But so that turned things against Marcus, who was kind of on shaky ground to begin with. And then I think, if I remember correctly, Marcus got pulled over and there was marijuana in his vehicle, which, of course, was an Escalade that Michael had bought for him. And that was the end of that for Marcus. He got kicked out of school. And I remember Tech did a press conference with, I think, Jim Weaver, the athletic director, and Charles Steger, the school president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how embarrassing.
We always heard that it was Steger who stepped in and was basically like...
Said that's enough.
That's enough. Like, I think they were going to originally suspend Marcus for like two games or something like that in 2006. And I think Steger stepped in and said, enough of this.
Well, Chris, isn't one of the things we found out over the years that Kevin Rogers, who was the quarterback's coach at the time, saw what Marcus did and wanted to take him out of the game?
I remember Marcus coming to the sideline and Rogers was all over. that's how I remember it. I haven't watched the game since I watched it live.
Why would you?
But that's how I remember it. Now, do you remember who one of the starting cornerbacks for Louisville was? Rod Smart? Who was that? No, Rod Council. Rod Council.
He was a Virginia Tech
commitment. He had three tackles in the game.
Okay. And he was a Virginia Tech commitment at one point until he was from Charlotte originally, I believe. And he was committed to Virginia Tech until he broke into his own high school one night and stole a bunch of computers. And so he ended up at Louisville, where they don't care about things like that.
Oh, that's a whole time. You could do a whole podcast on Louisville.
So there were a lot of exemplary citizens playing in that game, buddy. Yeah.
So the other thing that the game is memorable for is the beating that Louisville's quarterback took. Hunter Cantwell. I don't think Hunter was originally supposed to be the starter. He was a pretty good quarterback. And, man, the Tech defense just brutalized that guy all day long.
Hunter Cantwell, 15 of 37 in that game, 216 yards, three touchdowns, but three picks. He was sacked four times. And, you know, there's been a picture that's been kind of trending in terms of hokey Twitter the last couple of days that Will is engaged in. It's a picture of Justin Hamilton and Daryl Tapp both tackling the quarterback, Hunter Cantwell. And there's a picture of the gauze coming out of his coming out of his nose. And who would have thought 15 years later that that's your defensive coordinator and your defensive line coach for Virginia Tech? So kind of cool to look back on that in retrospect.
Yeah. So we didn't have media access back then. It's funny, up until 2012, the only place that granted Tech sideline media access was West Virginia. Did it twice. And the Gator Bowl actually did it once in 2001. They let us have I was actually in the press box for that. The one following the 2001 season. But we have pictures from that game because Russian Hokie Ivan Morozov used to, he'd just go and carry his camera into the stands and shoot from the stands. And so Cantwell just got beat to death. There would be several Tech guys thrown out of the game for targeting in this day and age. And so by then, Evan, he'd taken a big shot across the nose and his nose was bleeding. So they just stuffed these, you know, almost like cigarette filters, you know, these gauze things up in both sides of his nose. And then they hit him again. And then that hit you in that picture that Yvonne took, I circled the piece of gauze flying out of his nose. And Hunter Cantwell earned the undying respect of Virginia Tech fans that day for the brutalizing he took. And he just kept getting up and going back at it.
Every time he dropped back to pass, it was either completed for 40 yards or he was sacked.
There
wasn't a whole lot of in between.
So again, it's been 15 years since Virginia Tech and Louisville played. This is the last team Virginia Tech has had to play since the ACC expanded a couple of years ago. So last thing about this game, though, when Virginia Tech and Louisville played, when Virginia Tech won the Gator Bowl, you look at the names of players that played in that game and the NFL careers that they had. I mean, again, so Marcus Vick, quickly got
brief,
to the end of
briefly with the Miami cup of Dolphins.
Cedric Humes, by the way, in that game, I do want to bring up 22 carries, 113 yards on the ground, and a touchdown.
Nice.
But think about the four people who carried the football in the game: Cedric Humes, Brandon Orr, Marcus Vick, Justin Harbor. Receiving wise, David Clowney had a career in the NFL with the New York Jets. Jeff King caught three balls.
Long career.
He had a long career, especially with the Arizona Cardinals. Eddie Royal, folks, played in that game. He had two receptions for 1 yard.
The most underutilized player in Tech history.
And then defensively for Tech in that game, Vince Hall, Xavier Deeby, Justin Hamilton, Daryl Tapp, Jimmy Williams, Brandon Flowers. I mean, those are all names that made it to the NFL.
The offensive line had Will Montgomery, who started for the Redskins for years.
Yeah.
So lots of big names.
And then, of course, for Louisville, Elvis Dumervil went on to have a really good NFL career. So,
well, Chris told me once upon a time, years ago, he was like, oh, man, that 2005 team is the most talented team we ever had.
It was loaded.
And up until Chris said that, it had never occurred to me. But, yes, it was. And
I mean, we had Brandon Flowers backing up Jimmy Williams, for God's sake. Yeah. And that was just so deep.
Last thought on this game. When you look back on that Gator Bowl game, Virginia Tech and Louisville, is that one of the most physical, chippy Virginia Tech football games you can remember?
I would guess so. You know, chippy from the standpoint of Virginia Tech did two or three things to embarrass the university that day, the players that they put out on the field. It was, can you look up how many penalties Virginia Tech had? I just remember... You know, I think Jimmy – do you remember when Jimmy got thrown out, Chris?
It was in the first half. I want to say it was the first quarter. I want to say Louisville went up to like 14-3, and that's when he got kicked out.
Yeah. Virginia Tech had 7 penalties for 93 yards.
So there weren't a lot of them, but that's an average of 14 yards, 13 yards a penalty.
We averaged – every penalty was basically a personal
basically
foul.
A 15-yarder. There's probably a holding thrown in there to bring the total down a little bit.
No. Well, again, on today's episode 146 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, we'll preview the 2020 game between Virginia Tech and Louisville. I want to start with some news that came out earlier in the week, and it involves Virginia Tech's defensive line, coached by Daryl Tapp, of course, who played in that 2005 game. Tywan Garbutt back with the Virginia Tech team. He started 11 games last year. He's one of the most experienced defensive linemen that Virginia Tech has. Chris, while he's not going to play this week, what does that mean for the Virginia Tech defensive line moving forward?
Well, it helps with depth. But the fact of the matter is Tywan Garbutt is a defensive end for the old scheme who has not practiced one day in the new scheme.
Yeah.
So, quite frankly, I just don't see it having an impact this year.
If it does, it'll be very late in the season.
Right.
So.
Okay. There we go. Very brief. Let's transition.
Fans don't want to hear that. Fans want to, Tywan Garbutt's back. Yay.
And I like Tywan Garbutt. Like,
yeah, we like him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that guy, I specifically, he works really hard. Like, I specifically watched him in the Notre Dame game last year when I was up in South Bend, and he worked so hard to get to the quarterback in that game. And he made some big plays for Tech last year in the Wake Forest game.
Was it him? You were showing me a picture the other day where the Notre Dame guy was taking his hat off.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. It was like had one hand on the top of his head and another hand right here and was just doing that.
Just twisting.
Yeah. it's a brutal sport, man. So, like, we like Ty Garbutt.
But he's not going to be playing 30 snaps two weeks from now.
Right, right. The bottom line, he's a 6'1", 240-pound defensive end that isn't really built for this scheme. And he hasn't practiced it. He hasn't practiced any football at all since December.
Yeah.
So have extremely low expectations.
But it is good to have him back.
It is nice to have him.
It's good for him.
Yeah.
Speaking of the defensive line, before we transition into Louisville, missing the first half of this week will be Jerod Hewitt because he was ejected in the second half of the Wake Forest game. Who will get the majority of his snaps, do you expect?
If it's not Fuga, then it should be.
Then we're storming the gate with pitchforks.
Fuga is the best fit for this scheme. He's Virginia Tech's highest grading defensive tackle this year. He's 6'2", 323 pounds. He's the only defensive tackle on this team that is actually a physical fit for any other defense besides the old Tech defense.
Right.
So The funny thing is, like, I wasn't that high on Fuga coming out of high school because I was like, I didn't think he was a good fit for the old scheme, the Wiles right. Foster scheme. But now I'm really glad Tech signed him because I think he's a good fit for what they're trying to do now. Not only do I think he should start this weekend with Hewitt out, I mean, I think he should start
the rest of the season. And
he was
a late offer, right?
Extremely late offer. I believe it was John Yetzi on the Tech recruiting staff who kept pushing for Fuga to get offered. And they didn't necessarily offer him because they thought he was a big-time playmaker. It's because they looked at his entire senior film, and he never came off the field. And so he was playing every snap, every game on both sides of the ball, I think.
Man.
And he only got beat on one play the entire season, I think, is – So he was one of those guys. Like, he should be tired. You are, if that you're a big guy like Fuga, you got to play every snap. There's going to be what you would think a few times during the course of every game, probably, where you might take a play off here and there just to catch your breath. He never did. He kept playing hard and only lost one snap the entire season.
So, Evan, when people talk about, oh, so and so, Clemson and Alabama have 30 guys on their recruiting staff. And you're like, well, what do those people do? Not everybody can text or send birthday cards to recruits. That's one of the things they can do. You know, anybody can look great in a highlight film. You know, Chris and I watched the highlight film this morning where the guy looked outstanding. Mm-hmm. But you don't know what he's doing all the other plays.
Correct.
And if you can tell a guy, hey, we like this guy. Why don't you sit down and get together all of his film and just take a couple days and watch right. all of it and tell me what you think. Does he complain to the refs? Does he lay on the field when he's not really hurt? You know, does he do all those things?
Does he take plays off, things like that?
Yeah, you know, and Fuga didn't, and he also played for a good team. I think they played for the state championship. They lost it, though, right?
Yes.
To Highland Springs?
I forget.
Yeah, I think he's from Freedom High School.
He's from Freedom. I think they lost to Manchester.
Well, that was the year, for those that follow 804 High School football, Manchester was in 6A with Brendan Clark, their quarterback, committed to Notre Dame.
And we at Tech had an offensive lineman.
Jesse Hansen, I believe his name.
No, it wasn't.
He was Botetourt, wasn't he?
He was from Roanoke. The one from Richmond had to give up football because of concussions. But he was the starting interior lineman on that Manchester team.
That's right. Yeah. Corey Van Dyke did an excellent story.
And they went head-to-head, this offensive lineman that signed with Tech and Fuga. In that game.
That's right. Yeah. And then you had Highland Springs in 5A. It was actually, I think, one of the best years of Richmond high school football in quite some time. And unfortunately, Highland Springs did not get to play Manchester that year. So,
nah.
Anyway, yeah, really good memory on that. Let's transition and talk about this Louisville team. First of all, I think it's important to take a step back and look at the job that Scott Satterfield has done. You go back to 2018, Louisville was 2-10. Hire Scott Satterfield last year. They go 8-5, 5-3 in ACC play. There were high expectations for this Louisville team coming into 2020. Started off the season with a 35-21 win against Western Kentucky. And then four straight losses. A 47-34 loss to Miami. A 23-20 loss to Pittsburgh. A 46-27 loss at Georgia Tech. And then a 12-7 loss to Notre Dame in South Bend. However, they bounced back by putting up 48 points on Florida State, who was coming off of a high of beating then number 5, North Carolina. Chris, this offense is known for being explosive. When you look at this Louisville team at 2-4 on the season, what should we make of this team?
Probably one that should be better than 2-4, which could mean that they're about to explode and go on a run, or that there's a reason why they're 2-4, right? I know their Cunningham, their quarterback's numbers are down. Atwell, their receivers, his numbers are down slightly from a yards per catch standpoint. Cunningham's already thrown as many interceptions as he did all of last year. So their defense is better than it was last year. It's still not great by any stretch. It's very, very mediocre.
It's pretty darn experienced, though.
It is. It's a ton of seniors, so you would think it would be better. But
it's just not.
So I just maybe either some of these guys aren't great fits for this scheme, or their old coach just didn't recruit well at the end of his. Did he replace Petrino? Was that Petrino's second tenure?
Man, you don't know. You're doing some bad stuff to your football program if you hire Petrino.
Yeah. So I guess Petrino maybe didn't recruit well. towards the end. They got two middle linebackers, two inside linebackers, both seniors, and it's their two worst players on defense.
Hey, let me jump in with something before I forget it. So Malik Cunningham last year, his pass efficiency rating was a 194.2 or
That's
something like
Michael
that.
Michael Vick freshman year level.
Michael Vick is actually once I looked it up. Cunningham was 194.2 last year. Vick was 179.2. That was a freshman record. That was something like the second best pass efficiency rating ever.
Yeah.
So that tells you how the game has changed in 20 years. Mm. Completion percentages have gone up, et cetera. But to get back to Cunningham, that 194.2, he played in 12 games and he had 179 pass attempts. You need, in order to qualify for NCAA stats, you need 15 pass attempts a game. That would have been 180 attempts. So he was one attempt short of qualifying to be in the official NCAA stats. And here's the punchline. If he had qualified, he would have finished number two in the country in passing efficiency behind
Joe Burrow, eventual Heisman Trophy winner.
All I was thinking is Bobby Hebert. Like, why would I think of Bobby Hebert?
Why would you think he played
for the Saints down there.
Half the people watching this podcast have no idea who you're talking about.
What are you talking about? But no,
Evan doesn't know who you're talking about.
He would have finished second behind Joe Burrow.
But I do know what Office Space is.
Bobby Hebert would have been an ideal quarterback for the Jets, Evan. Kind of a nobody. Doesn't really do anything.
So let's talk about Malik Cunningham real quick. You mentioned how good he was last year. He was a huge reason why Louisville went from 2-10 to 8-5 under first year coach Scott Satterfield. His numbers in 2019, Cunningham completed 62% of his passes, 2,061 yards, 22 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. Yeah. Numbers so far this year, 62.9% completion percentage, so this about the same. Just over nearly 1,400 passing yards, 12 touchdowns, 5 interceptions. So, Chris, it does feel like Cunningham has been more turnover prone here in 2020 compared to 2019.
It certainly has. Now, especially their first four games, their last two, not so much. So that's
they were a minus 8 turnover ratio in their first four games, and they're even in their last two games.
Right, and so,
and they've only turned it over once in their last two games.
And you know, as we've found out the last couple of weeks, turnovers, they can be kind of unpredictable.
Yeah.
Like Boston College comes into the Tech game, what, ranked first in turnover margin?
No, but they were up there. They were top 10.
Yeah. And then they turned over five times.
And then
Tech has been really good at turnover margin. And then they go down to Wake Forest and turn it over three times.
Yeah.
And now Wake Forest is number one in the country in turnover margin. And they'll probably have four this week against whoever they play if that trend keeps up.
Yeah.
So you just can't – even if a team turns it over a lot – remember Duke came into that game turning it over a ton.
Right.
And we were like
– But we knew that wasn't going
to
last.
We were like, they're due to have a game where they don't turn it over, right? And, yeah, they only had one that game. So you can't necessarily put – you can't expect turnovers to continue to go as they're going. So they didn't continue to go poorly for Louisville. Maybe it'll flip back now. Who knows? It's like when I make predictions for game previews, I generally throw out the turnover stuff.
Yeah, when you make predictions, you don't assume big special teams plays or turnovers.
Or penalties.
You know? I've never written a prediction where I was like, Tech is going to force 5 turnovers and win 40-14.
It's rare. Now, you know, some of those old Duke teams in the ACC, you could do that, like before Cutcliffe got there.
Yeah.
You know, that you could do that back then because they were just so awful at quarterback. But now passing games have gotten so advanced that you just can't look at a team and be like, oh man, they're going to get out talented and they're going to be swamped with turnovers. You can't really do that anymore.
Yeah.
One other thought on Malik Cunningham. Mentioned how he's thrown 5 interceptions this year. That's as many as he threw in 12 games last season. One stat that I found very interesting that is part of Chris's game preview that's available right now on techsideline.com is that he hasn't been very accurate this year. His accurate throw rate is 46.6%, which ranks 13th in the ACC. Chris, as you said, in other words, he makes a good throw less than 50% of the time,
right,
with his receivers having to work hard to catch many of his passes.
Right. So if Tech's defensive backs can really stay on those receivers tight and that ball comes in behind them, and it'll be very difficult
catch
for him to catch those passes if you're all over him. Now, if you're sitting back loose and that guy's got plenty of room, then yeah, he can twist back and make make a tough catch. But if you're on him, then it's going to be difficult. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of coverage Tech comes out and plays this week, because you obviously, with a guy like Tutu Atwell, not a very big guy, 5'9", 165 pounds, but a big-time player, definite deep threat, a guy who can take the distance anytime he takes the ball. You want to leave that guy a cushion to a certain extent, right? So it'll be interesting to see how Tech plays it.
So one thing you might do is, for example, play tight man coverage and blitz the quarterback, because the other thing about Cunningham is he only completes 28% of his passes under pressure. But when you play that sort of game, he also runs a lot. You know, he scrambles a lot.
Yeah.
You know, so you're running that risk that if you pressure him and he gets through your rush, he's going to do a lot of damage to you.
He's only averaging 2.7 yards per carry this year.
Compared to 4.0 last year.
They don't do designed runs with him very often. Sorry, I was looking at something out the window. But anyway, it's a giant bird with his wings spread.
That's when you need a fifth camera.
Yeah,
on the
that's
TSL
when
podcast.
We probably should start closing the shades for podcasts when I get distracted by things like that.
You look a bird.
Yeah, but anyway.
It can be easy for the Tech defense to get distracted by the passing game than forget about the running ability.
The running ability of Cunningham. So Tech struggled with mobile quarterbacks, you know, last year and kind of in recent years. I think the way they're playing their defensive ends now, and the new scheme in general, I think is going to be a little it's going to be more conducive.
More containment, yeah.
Yeah, but right now, from a pure personnel standpoint, I really worry about Tech's athleticism at linebacker with a scrambling quarterback.
Right.
I bet Tisdale can match up fine, but like if you get like Ashby can't run right now. Like you saw it against Wake Forest last week. The Wake Forest quarterback, he's not a
Hardman ran past him, yeah.
Yeah, and that guy came into the game with minus 45 rushing yards,
right.
And Ashby couldn't keep up with him on the edge. So I really worry about Ashby in this game when Cunningham scrambles. I don't think he'll be able to tackle him in the open field. And when Ashby and Dax are on the field together, like if Tisdale is not in the game, I think Tisdale has to be in the game all the time. If you want to play Dax, get him a few snaps, get him to give Ashby a break at Mike. But I don't think Tisdale can come off the field in a game like this.
So they used to put spies on the quarterbacks. They used to take a linebacker, and you know, back when mobile quarterbacks weren't as common, and they would take their most athletic linebacker and say, you pay attention to the quarterback, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a thing anymore, right, because passing games have become so sophisticated.
No, you can still do it. I think it depends on your personnel. Mm-hmm. If I had Tremaine Edmonds, I'd be spying the heck out of mobile quarterbacks, man. That might actually be a good strategy.
Or Xavier Adebe.
Yeah, right.
Xavier was a guy, great open field tackle.
You can tell him to spy, or you can just give him a lot of freedom and say, we want you to spy him, but if you see an opening, if you think you can get a sack, go after him.
Yeah.
It depends on how much you trust the player to make the right decisions. But from a pure athletic standpoint, like I could see a guy like Edmonds playing spy in a game like this and being very effective. But
you know, Chamari Connor might be good at that.
Yeah, maybe. But the thing is, you need to be an inside guy to be a spy.
Right.
You can't be the slot corner, which is basically what he is. Because what if the guy scrambles the other side of the field? You can't exactly shadow him over there, right? So it has to be one of those inside linebackers.
Okay.
And previewing Virginia Tech at Louisville this Saturday on Halloween, episode 146 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. We're analyzing this really talented Louisville offense, and we talked a lot about their quarterback, Malik Cunningham, rightfully so. He's talented. He's explosive. So is their running back, and Javian Hawkins, who had a great redshirt freshman campaign last year. He ran for over 1,500 yards, averaged 5.8 yards per carry. And this year, 693 yards, averaging 6 yards per carry. And he, you know, as you said in your game preview, and I completely agree, he's one of the best running backs in this conference, and that says a lot, especially the running backs Virginia Tech has seen over the last couple of weeks. Michael Carter of North Carolina, Kenneth Walker III of Wake Forest last week, Christian Beal Smith.
I was going to say they did a really good job against Kenneth Walker, and I didn't think they would. But they didn't do such a good job against Bill Smith.
So, well, let me ask you, given how Wake Forest ran the football last week against Virginia Tech, and then you've got another good running back in Hawkins you're facing this week, how concerned are you about Virginia Tech being able to stop the run this Saturday?
I'm concerned. We've talked about this, and we pretty much agree that Louisville, if they hold to form, to pattern, they're going to hit you with a 75-yard touchdown run or touchdown pass and then go three and out three times in a row and then hit you with a 60-yard touchdown play. So consistently stopping the run, I don't know. Giving up big plays, that can happen. You were talking about Christian Beal-Smith. Foo just basically said he busted it like a big 58-yarder or something earlier just because somebody made a bad run fit.
Someone or one of the young guys who hasn't played much, I don't know.
You know, on that play, if I remember that play correctly, Divine Diablo just accelerated into the gap and took on a blocker as if he was expecting someone else to be there to get the running back. Mm-hmm. And that person never appeared. So that's probably the play Foo's talking about. Right. You know. I'm just more worried about the big plays than I am consistent drives down the field. I'll answer it that way.
Chris, let me, before you jump in here, I do want to mention what you put in your game preview, where the Cardinals rank nationally in terms of big plays generated. 10-plus yard plays, number 16 in the country. 20-plus yard plays, number 8 in the country. 30-plus yard plays, number 10 in the country. And plays over 40 yards or more, number 6.
Right, and what's their total offense ranking? I think I put it in there somewhere.
Not that great.
Not that good. I think it's like 42nd.
They rank 43rd nationally in total offense.
43rd, but
and the Hokies rank 21st comparison.
For comparison. All right, so they're middle of the pack in total offense, 416 yards a game, yet they're top 10 basically in big plays generated.
They will hit you with a big
play. So when you say they'll hit you with a 70-yard gain, touchdown, and then go three and out for three or four straight possessions and then hit an 80-yard touchdown.
That's pretty much it.
That's what those numbers indicate, man. So this is going to be one of those games that you're watching, and there's going to be, I think, a lot of peaks and valleys for the Virginia Tech defense. As a fan, you're going to be like, there's going to be parts of the game where you're really happy with how the defense is playing, and then they're going to give up like a 70-yard, 5-yard play, and you're going to be mad at them then. But that's just kind of the nature of what Louisville does. And I don't know why they're inconsistent. Like I said, Cunningham's numbers aren't quite as good. I
think it's just sheer athleticism.
From a big play standpoint, yes, but I don't know why they're not as consistent offensively as they were last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can be a good athlete and not be a good football player.
Yeah, but he was a better football player last year. Yeah. That's the thing. I don't know if the film got out, but it's 2020, man. For all they didn't get to go through spring either. For all I know, he had COVID in the preseason and a bunch of his receivers were out. I mean,
yeah, there's a lot of individual players whose performances dropped way off.
Right.
And,
so
that could be it.
We don't know how. And I've said that, like, I'm not going to be very critical of teams this year, you know, including Tech, because there's just so much about each team that we don't know regards to who's been out, how long they were out, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, like, I sit here and say Cunningham has regressed. Atwell's not as good last year, but there might be some darn good reasons for that that we just don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, as Cunningham has struggled, I mean, we mentioned how, you know, his completion percentage is down. He's thrown 5 picks this year, which was the most he threw last year in 12 games. But as we mentioned a moment ago, I mean, Javian Hawkins is having as good a season on pace as he did last year. And I want to spend a moment talking about Tutu Atwell, because last week we talked a lot about Ja'Cory Roberson, the number one receiver for Wake Forest, and he certainly had an impact on the game. Not quite as big an impact as he's capable of, but Tutu Atwell, let me read you the numbers here for Louisville's number one receiver. Last year, caught 70 passes for over 1,200 yards and averaged 18.2 yards per catch. Coming into Saturday, 32 receptions, 450 yards. He's averaging 14 yards a catch and 5 touchdowns. I mean, Will, he's almost averaging a first down and a half every time he catches the football. You look at Virginia Tech's corners. I mean, anybody in particular you think might match up well against Atwell?
Not really. I don't know if Waller's going to play or not. I don't get the impression that he is. Dorian Strong, he'll be there someday, you know, but not every down. yet because he's so young.
I don't know. I think he's pretty much – I think he played all but five snaps against Wake.
Well, I mean to stay with him every single play. Sure. Yeah. You know, yeah. That's a tall order for anybody. It's interesting. He's a slot receiver-sized guy. He's 5'9", 165. I actually don't know if they play him in the slot or outside or what. I would assume in the slot. And so, you know, 15 yards a catch for a guy in the slot, is that's a lot of yards.
Last year was 18.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I'm saying. And his numbers are down.
And you know, the thing is, Louisville's actually played six games. They're one of the – I don't know if I should say one of the few teams in the country to play six games, but, the you know, Virginia Tech's played five. Yeah. And there are a lot of teams that have played less than six. So he's basically halfway through the season. And you said he had 70 catches last year. He's got 32 right now. And he's kind of on the same pace there. And at this point, I'm just rambling. So I don't know that Tech has a guy that can really hang with him the whole game.
I want to wrap up the offense because we do need to transition to the defense and get a break in here in a minute. But, Chris, I'm going to use a baseball analogy real quick. Is it fair to use this analogy? Louisville's offense is like a relief pitcher who throws 99. He either throws strikes or he's going to walk guys on four pitches. You know, is that a fair comparison?
You could say that. And maybe the other comparison for baseball is one of those home run lineups that if they don't hit home runs, they're not going to produce any runs because everybody, you know, nobody hits for a high average. They don't draw walks. Nobody's like a real speed guy on the bases, right? So it's tough for them to like generate runs when they aren't hitting homers. So you know, you could maybe say if they don't hit homers against Tech, they don't have a habit of like driving the length of the field on 8, 9, 10 play drives and things like that.
So you never know what you're going to get from me, but when you guys have that discussion, I think about a book I read as a kid. There was an author when I was a kid, Matt Christopher, and he wrote sports books. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a book called The Kid Who Only Hit Home Runs. And it was about this kid who wasn't a very good hitter. And then an old man came and sat on a bench to watch him play one day. And he called the kid over and gave him a bit of advice. And all the kid did after that was hit home runs. And that old man came to every single game. And then, of course, at the end of the book, the old man doesn't show up in the championship game. Gosh. And the kid goes out and hits a home run anyway. Just came to mind. I don't know if any of your older readers out there read any Matt Christopher stuff when they were a kid.
I've heard of Matt Christopher.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, I used to go down to the – this is when I was young, when we lived in Radford, when I was 5 to 10 years old. Man, I used to go down to the library and look for those Matt Christopher books and read them. Is it time for a break now?
I think it's time for a break now. But the headline I'm coming back with to preview the Louisville defense that Chris used in his game preview. Defense better than first glance. We're going to step aside for a break. When we come back, we look at the Louisville defense, we get game predictions, and we get to your questions on YouTube Live. You're watching and listening to episode 146 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm.
If you have received a DUI or other traffic-related offense, the road ahead can seem uncertain. Here at Fisher Law Firm, we have a team that is with you every step of the way. We have the experience that comes along with having defended more than 30,000 criminal and traffic cases statewide and the expertise to get the job done. Call anytime, day or evening, for your free consultation or a complimentary copy of my book. Don't forget to ask us about our free appeal guarantee. To learn how we can help solve your problem, check us out at fisherlegal.com. This is Jonathan Fisher, class of 98. Let's go Hokies.
Welcome back in episode 146 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. It is great to have you with us. A reminder, the Tech Sideline Podcast also brought to you by the Southeast Regional Training Center. For more on how you can help Virginia Tech Wrestling, be sure to go to southeastrtc.com. Evan Hughes back with you, along with Chris Coleman, Will Stewart, the best producer in the land, Malcolm Stewart. He is behind the scenes taking your YouTube live questions for the end of the show. And we just checked the comments section in between our break, and we had a very special comment from Dorian Strong's dad.
Donovan.
So he appreciated the the shout out that we talked about him or a couple of podcasts ago. So, Mr. Strong, thanks so much for watching. We appreciate your support.
So, first of all, there was a little bit of confusion. We were not saying that Dorian's 5'9", 165. That's, was it, who were you talking about, Hawkins or Atwell?
We're talking about Atwell, the receiver for Louisville.
Yeah. So, secondly, you realize we can never, ever be critical of Dorian Strong now, right? Because his dad listens to the podcast, and he's
his
huge.
Dad, and his dad's a bodybuilder, yeah.
So, Dorian, please don't ever make a mistake.
Let's transition now. We spent a lot of time talking about the Louisville offense, rightfully so. They're explosive. But the defense, the headline that Chris used in the game preview, which again is available on TechSideline.com. It's a terrific read. It'll really get you ready for the game on Saturday. Chris, you said better than first glance.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
You know, if you look at a couple of their games when they gave up 46 to Georgia Tech, and how many did they give up?
Similar number to Miami, 47 to Miami, or something.
And they gave
like
up 12 to Notre Dame.
Right. So you know they played terrible defense last year, and then they kind of start this season off giving up 47 in their second game, and then 46, and so you're like, yeah, that's just not a good defense. But they've played better since then, and a lot of their numbers are very middle of the pack-ish, so to speak. But, you know, they've got a lot of seniors, so they're experienced. But if you've got a lot of seniors and you're still not, like, better than average, that just means you lack talent.
Something right
most
there.
Likely, yeah. So I don't think they're all that talented on defense, but they are experienced. But I do think Tech will move the football and score points on them.
So unfortunately, I don't know the specifics of it. I know they held Notre Dame to 12 points. I don't know anything about Notre Dame other than as I listen to SiriusXM and they talk about Notre Dame, they talk about how Notre Dame cannot throw the football downfield. It's their offensive weakness. They have a good running game, but they can't go downfield with the passing game.
Well, they also got knocked out of COVID during the middle of the season.
Okay.
And that's extremely difficult.
Who does that sound like?
Right.
You know, Virginia Tech is also a team that's known as more of a running team and hasn't thrown the ball downfield yet. So I don't know if it was just one of those days for Notre Dame, including COVID. Or
you know, Notre Dame is
is their quarterback.
You know, almost picked Tech to beat them last year, and I picked Notre Dame to win a really close game. And I remember saying on the podcast that I would pick Tech to win the game if I thought Hendon was
the quarterback.
Yeah, because Notre Dame is one of those offenses. You know, that they very much rely on the traditional running game, and the quarterback's not a factor in the running game. They're such a traditional offense, I think, that you kind of know what you're going to get. And sure enough, Tech's defense went up there and, except for the final
played
drive,
well,
shut them down, right?
Yeah.
So I do think they're a little more simple than like the Virginia Tech offense,
okay. So
to speak. Tech's offense is more dynamic. Not to say that Tech is better or worse or anything like that, but they're more dynamic for sure.
A couple of notes. You mentioned how big plays are a big strength of the Louisville offense. It's a weakness of the Cardinals' defense. 40 yards or more, 40-plus yard plays, number 86 in the country. 30-plus yard plays, number 82 in the country. Mm-hmm. And 10-plus yard plays, number 88 in the country. So, Will, we thought last week could be a high-scoring game between Virginia Tech and Wake Forest, and turned out it wasn't.
Right.
Does this game still feel like it could be a high-scoring game, given...
It would be interesting to hear the stats for Wake Forest, because we knew Wake Forest was a good tackling team, mm-hmm. and they try to keep you in front of them, so they probably don't give up a lot of big plays. Maybe we'll get this week what we're expecting, which is a high-scoring game with a lot of chunk plays. What's not relayed in those stats there, are they giving up big passing plays or big running plays or both? You'd prefer they give up big running plays, which is what Virginia Tech was getting early in the year.
I could have done that, but I didn't.
That's all right. You know, there's a limited amount of time.
Yeah.
A couple of other numbers about the Louisville defense. They're number 44 in the country. They're allowing 383 yards a game.
That's not a lot. That doesn't sound like a lot to me.
Here's how Pro Football Focus ranks them against other ACC programs. Overall, defensively, number 8. So middle of the pack, rushing, number 7, tackling, number 7, pass rush, number 10, and coverage, number 9. So on paper, Chris, this seems like a middle-of-the-road defense. Nothing.
At all levels.
Yeah, right. Well, it's exactly pretty much what Wake Forest seemed like last week.
Except for the tackling.
Wake was number 1 in tackling.
Were they? Yeah.
In the conference.
I knew, yeah.
So, I would definitely say this is a week where Tech should be able to move the football. I called him Raheem Herbert.
Raheem Herbert. We knew what you meant.
I'm combining both our running backs.
Khalil Blackshear.
I thought Khalil Herbert versus Wake Forest was an interesting matchup. They did miss some tackles on him. But yes, there were other times where you're like, man, that was a really good tackle. So I think from a tackling standpoint to a breaking tackle standpoint, I thought both teams kind of broke even last week. I think Tech will do fine offensively this week. I think they're not going to have the turnovers and the penalties. And Justin Fuentes-Tenor, we're going to throw out 2018 because it was all freshmen. and that he had to put on the field. But in the other years of his tenure, Tech has only lost two games in a row twice. Once in 2017, and then last year, and last year with UVA
in the
bowl game, but that was a whole month in between, right?
Really close.
Yeah. So anytime Tech has lost a football game under Fuente, and there was a fixable reason for the loss, and in this case, it was turnovers and penalties. Even if you with some of the bad execution up front, if you take out the turnovers and the penalties, Tech wins that game fairly easily. So he's fixed things like that before whenever there's like a blip on the radar, right? Yeah. And so if history holds, Tech will play a much cleaner football game this Saturday offensively than they did this past week.
Right.
And if they do that, they'll score points on Louisville.
Yeah, and so to put the penalties in perspective, Tech had 10 penalties for 112 yards. The 10 ties the most under Fuente. That was against Cincinnati in the Military Bowl. And for those of you who listen only, I'm spouting this off the top of my head. I'm not looking this up. And 112 yards was the most. So in the, what are we talking, 60 games he's coached at Tech now? Whatever, you know, 50 or 60 games. That's the worst game they've had penalty-wise. Chris is right. That will not happen again. If you look at Tech's penalties per game, it's something like 4, 3, and 5 in the first three games, then 7 in the fourth game against Boston College, and then 10 against Wake Forest. I just don't think that's going to continue.
Yeah. Now that we've said it's not going to happen 2 weeks in a row.
Well, they're also never going to rush for 300 yards again.
Right.
Reverse mojo. It's reverse mojo, folks.
That's true.
There are two players on the Louisville defense that I want to highlight. I want to start with defensive tackle Jared Goldwire, who's a 6'6", 305-pound senior. He's going to line up at nose tackle over Tech center Brock Hoffman. And, Chris, you've mentioned in previous weeks how Hoffman has been the lowest grader for a couple of weeks. I don't have the exact stats in front of me, but compared to other Tech offensive linemen, he hasn't graded out as well.
Right.
Last week, it felt like Carlos Boogie Basham had his way at times against Tech's offensive line. How important is that matchup of Goldwire against Hoffman up front in the trenches?
Yeah, it's an important one. Now, you know, Tech will double team and things like that with the zone blocking plays and everything like that.
Because they only have three down linemen.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
You'll get some double teams.
Right. So, I think it's an important matchup for sure. And I know if those offensive linemen, particularly the interior offensive linemen, you know, I think they probably read their press clippings a little too much. The tackles played fine last week, but the interior linemen did not. And I think it's a great opportunity for like Vance Vice to use the depth that he's got. You know, put Austin Cannon in there, put Zach Coit in there, put Brian Hudson in there, and let those starters know that, hey, if you have an off game, these guys are perfectly capable of taking your place. Silas Janzy played well when Tenuta was out.
That's right.
Right? So that's the advantage of depth. Like, I think the offensive line for Tech will play better this week.
Yes.
And because I bet Vance Vice in practice has probably rotated more guys in with the first string.
And because they are better than what they played last week.
Right, and because they are better. And it's one thing if you're a starter and a coach does that and you know the coach is just messing with you because that backup is nowhere near as good as you are. But in the case of like Doug Nestor versus Brian Hudson's a pretty solid football player, right? So you do have to worry about that if you're Doug Nestor, if you have a repeat performance. So that's one of the reasons I think they'll get back on track this week.
Quickly, rapid fire, because I want to make sure we've got enough time for questions and, of course, your predictions. Chris, you mentioned the weakness of the Louisville defense. It comes up the middle. If Tech's able to get by Goldwire at nose guard, two inside linebackers very weak against the run in C.J. Avery and Dorian Etheridge, two of ACC's worst linebackers in run defense, have not been great by the pass either. So, Will, it feels like opportunity for Virginia Tech, if they can win the line of scrimmage battle and get to that second level, could be an opportunity to run the football effectively on Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got their run defense rankings on the back here if you want to talk about that. It's first paragraph on the back, second from the last line, Rajay Burns and C.J. Avery.
Rajay Burns and C.J. Avery ranked 39th and 40th.
And excuse 40? Me, Burns is an outside linebacker, actually, not an inside linebacker, but you get the...
So 39th and 40th among 47 ACC linebackers in run defense grades.
And as an aside, Ashby and Dax rank 42nd and 46th. So this game is going to be filled with the linebackers who have not been good against the run this year. So far and this year. As an aside, Rajay Burns is a 6 foot, 215-pound outside linebacker for Louisville, who is also their punt returner.
And has been for 3 years?
For 3 years now. So think about, like, if Chamari Connor was Virginia Tech's punt returner.
Yeah, weird. You don't see that a lot.
You don't see it a lot at all.
I bet he was a running back in high school.
Had to have been, man. Yeah.
At that size, that's good running back size. So I forgot what the question was, Evan.
Just that it feels like Virginia Tech might have a chance to run the ball well if they can win win in the trenches up front.
Yeah. We talked in the last podcast about recency bias, that you think the team – that you see this weekend is going to be the same one you saw last weekend, positive or negative. You know, Virginia Tech just didn't run the football last week like they usually do. They didn't get the blocking and the room for Khalil Herbert to work. And I just think you'll see that this weekend. I'm not going to sit here and say they're going to rush for 300 yards, but I think you'll feel better about the running game.
Storyline of the week on the defense, real quick. I wanted to bring it up. It was in the secondary. Cornerback Keytrell Clark, sophomore, who is a transfer from Liberty, who has been one of the best corners that Louisville's had all year. He's from Midlothian, Virginia, picked the Flames over a host of small programs, as you mentioned in your game preview, Chris. So last week we saw, you know, I don't think we talked about it a ton, and I don't know if it got the way, you know, the attention, but Boogie Basham was from Northside High School, Southwest Virginia, went to Wake Forest, and here's a guy who doesn't look like, according to the article, he was recruited by Virginia Tech. So you wonder, just a storyline to follow this week of another person that's probably hungry to play the Hokies.
Never. I don't know if I ever watched his high school tape. 5'10", 165 pounds, very small by cornerback standards. So it's one of those things, like, you play the percentages. Like, you might look at a guy's tape and think, oh, that guy's a really good football player, but he's so small. It's like Tutu Atwell was 5'9", 150 coming out of high school.
Yeah,
right?
Who's going to recruit that?
So he has like two offers, and he Louisville and a bad program, I think, where there's only
two.
See,
that's what Virginia Tech thought they were getting when they recruited Khalil Pimpleton.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And then they didn't, although he did pretty well at Central Michigan.
Central Michigan.
But like, if you recruit a 150-pound football player, 9 out of 10 times is not going to work.
Yeah.
Right? And so, like, Atwell, it worked. And Keytrell Clark is 165 now. He was probably in the 155 range coming out of high school. And you don't offer that why would you? Right? And because if you play the percentages, chances are it's not going to work out, but it's worked out with those guys.
Yeah,
and some of their best players are under 200 pounds. Their quarterback, their running back, their top receiver, and their top corner.
Yeah, and maybe that's why they're not as good week to week as you think they ought to be. Maybe that's part of it. They're just
maybe they're banged up because
they just don't have the size.
Yeah. Well, wasn't trying to knock for not recruited. Just thinking storyline. You know,
sure.
Again, just 2 weeks of just in-state ties.
Well, that storyline was going to happen this week or next week. Either way, if he'd stayed at Liberty, right?
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. That's a good point. There's
two kinds of guys you hate losing from the state of Virginia. You hate losing the top level recruits. And you hate losing the under-the-radar guys that turn out to have good careers somewhere else.
I hate what had happened with Boogie Basham because, you know, he's got a cousin, obviously, that played at Tech.
Third cousin.
And Basham's such a good football name, right?
Yeah.
Boogie Basham, defensive end for Virginia Tech. God, our fans would love that, wouldn't they? But, like when he was recruited, like, I watched his high school tape. The first thing is, like, for the Tech scheme at the time, he did not seem like any kind of a fit at all. And if, you know, Tech fans want Tech to take the local guys, but then if it doesn't work out, you go back and say, well, you were all over me to take him, and he just wasn't a fit. That's not my fault, right? So he didn't look like a schematic fit for Tech's old system. But he is a very – he'd be a great schematic fit for this current system, unfortunately. Timing, man.
You know, it's a good trait to have with a schematic fit.
I would say that grit – is a good trait to have.
Partner of the Tech Sideline podcast and sponsor here at Tech Sideline. Will and I throw on the hats real quick. Will, where can you get great grit gear?
What you want to do, Evan, is you want to go to Tech Sideline and you want to select the More menu, our sponsors, and find them down there. Now, y'all better get on it because their sponsorship expires at the end of this month. This is their last podcast sponsoring. So,
and it's almost the end of the month.
We get to keep the hats, though.
Fantastic.
And the face mask.
And the face mask.
Yep. So many thanks to Grit for their sponsorship, and that's where you find their stuff.
All right, so time for game predictions, and then I promise we will get to your questions on YouTube Live. We are at the hour four mark, so running a little long, but a great podcast nonetheless, episode 146 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. I'm going to ask you guys for your game predictions. I always do. All I'm going to say is this. Here is how Chris started his final thoughts column of his game preview. Quote, heck, I don't know. And here is how Will Stewart's take started. Quote, this one is really a crapshoot. Yes. So, Chris, I'm going to start with you. Who wins and what's the final score?
I picked it 34-27 Virginia Tech. I could easily pick it 34-27 Louisville.
Right.
You know, I'm 3-2 in picking games, but even in the games I've picked correctly, it didn't exactly go how I thought they were going to go, with the exception of the UNC game, but even that was higher scoring than I thought it would be. So, you know, at this point, I mean, on paper, the numbers say this should be in the 30s or low 20s maybe in this case,
low 40s,
for one of the teams. Yeah. I don't know. I'm just – I don't want to pick, like, some totally, like, off-the-wall number, but I want to pick something that – okay, the numbers say this could be a fair reflection of what the score is going to be. So I've landed on 34-27, and that's as good a guess as any just looking at the numbers. But, I mean, I certainly would not take that bet and go to Las Vegas.
No.
No, this is not a game to bet on at all, in my opinion.
So I just flat went on the message board this morning after the game preview was posted, and I said, here's how I'm going to pick every game the rest of the way. You know, there'll be exceptions like Clemson. I'm going to pick Virginia Tech to score in the high 30s and the opponent to score in the low to mid 30s. I'm just going to do this every time out, because until you start to see otherwise, like what if Virginia Tech's defense goes out and holds Louisville to 17 points? Then maybe I'll start to change that viewpoint.
I think the Pitt game might be different than that.
Yeah, but, well, let's not drill down.
Cross that bridge when we get there.
So I'm looking at the – so we always include polls at the end of our preview articles, and – and last week, so you got four choices. Tech wins by 11+, Tech wins by 1-10, the opponent wins by 1-10, or the opponent wins by 11+. And last week, in the first two categories with Tech winning, 93% of the people thought that Tech was going to beat Wake Forest, and maybe that explains the reaction a little bit.
Yeah, it does. It does. I had that thought when I watched it this morning, when I looked at that this morning.
And this week, so far, there's only 390 votes because the preview hadn't been out that long, but you've got only 64% of fans picking Tech to win.
Right.
So part of that is that recency bias, and part of it is respect for what Louisville can do offensively. Mm-hmm. But I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting that, like, we both picked a really, really close game. And if you're predicting a really, really close game, you're basically admitting that it could go either way, right?
Yeah.
Correct.
But still 93% of Tech fans thought Tech was going to win. And how many of them thought Tech was going to win by double digits?
Against Wake Forest?
Yeah.
Let's see, 49%.
So basically half the fan base
thought Tech was going to win by 10
and
plus.
That goes back
so they read our whole preview and were like, huh, I disagree.
I just jumped down here to vote. I didn't read what you had to say.
So Chris has it, Virginia Tech 34, Louisville 27. Will Stewart, what say you?
35-31, Virginia Tech.
And I'm going Virginia Tech 38, Louisville 35. I think... like you said, mid to upper 30s for Virginia Tech every week, and then the defense to give up maybe
so
high
that,
20s, low
30s. I'll take any win, however I can get
that's
it.
That's the same score as the 2011 Miami game, 38-35, when Tech could not stop Miami after a certain point.
I typically don't make predictions, and last week I felt very confident that the winner of the Tech-Wake Forest game, based off of all the prep and the research we did, I was like, oh, the winner of this game is going to put up low 50s. I was expecting a shootout, and I'm sitting there watching that game and said, this is why I ask the questions and they give the analysis.
Yeah, I've never picked a game score correctly in 15 years of writing our game previews.
I've picked a few.
You've picked a couple of them.
Two I can think of right off the top of my head. The season opener against
Alabama.
I picked 35-10, and Alabama won it 35-10. And, of course, the famous one is the Belk Bowl against Arkansas, where I picked 35-24. And it was 24-0, right?
It was 24-0 at halftime.
And at the moment at which Arkansas went up 24-0, I tweeted out, well, it's 24-0. I picked 35-24. You know what needs to happen from here on out. And then it happened.
One of your greatest tweets of all time.
I'll never top that.
Bro, no. Yeah, you should have retired from Twitter.
I should have quit.
Yeah. But, you don't know. It's like I always do so much research. and try to get it as right as possible, and I've never picked it dead on.
Really? You never?
Never.
You'd figure you'd just blunder into it.
Exactly. Well, I'm gonna blunder into it. Like, for the rest of this season, it's going to be – just going to be grasping at straws. And watch, of all years, this will be the one I actually –
the COVID year.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's turn it over to our faithful viewers on YouTube Live. Hour 9 minutes in the podcast. Thanks for patiently waiting. Let's go ahead and turn it over to the
– You can
best.
Only ask yes or no questions. I'm just kidding.
We can really get Susan with some questions there if it's yes or no. Malcolm Stewart, what's happening?
All right, we'll start with Andrew Rosso. What are the chances of Tech playing spoiler to Clemson this year, and how could that help in Fuente's recruiting?
Blue Tarski's
GPA.
Well, that's an interesting question. Like, it's not impossible.
Yeah.
Because, like, 2020 is you never know what's going to happen. Well, when's the last time Clemson lost a regular season game? Was that Syracuse?
Probably it was Syracuse or Pitt. Didn't Pitt beat them 1 year?
I think Pitt beat them 1 year. But
Chris,
I think
Blewett had a game-winning field goal.
From Northern Virginia.
Yeah. Really? I didn't know that part.
Yep, sure was, yeah.
I always dreamed as a commentator to say Blewett. That was always kind of like something I was hoping for.
I want to say it was Syracuse that year up in
the Dome. And then Syracuse gave him a hard time the next year and almost beat him.
Right.
And
right.
Carolina.
Got knocked out of the game.
But you're talking about 2017. Yeah. So Clemson... If that's right, I don't. You can look that. You can.
I think they've won 20 high 20s straight ACC games in a row.
So law of averages, buddy. Law of averages. They got to lose one at one point. So I don't think it's likely. But here's the thing. Like, the more Clemson wins between now and then, just I think the chances of Tech actually pulling that upset go up because they got to lose at some point.
They're not going to be a UCLA and win 88.
Right.
ACC,
right.
You know,
right.
UCLA
now the thing is, I don't think they're going to lose the week before the ACC championship with an opportunity to go to the playoffs, assuming there are playoffs and things like that. If you're going to get them, it's going to be some random September or October game, I think.
Yeah.
When they're just kind of sleepy. But I think they're too close to that end goal at that point to have a let up. So I don't think it's very likely, but it's not impossible.
At Syracuse in the Carrier Dome on Friday, October 13th, in 2017.
Friday nights in a Carrier Dome, buddy. That sounds awful.
That's doing some scheduling.
And then the year before, they lost on a game-winning field goal from Chris Blewett, and they lost 43-42 to Pittsburgh.
To Pitt, yeah.
So those are the they've lost.
Scored 43 points against them.
I know. Clemson has only lost two regular season games since 2016.
To ACC or regular season?
Regular season. Non-conference or ACC.
The question was, how much could that improve Virginia Tech's recruiting? Okay, well, how much did it improve Pitt's recruiting and Syracuse's recruiting? How much did Tech beating Ohio State improve Tech recruiting? At the end of the Beamer era. But generally speaking, winning one game does nothing to you when it comes to recruits.
Yeah, I'm not.
Recruits don't pay attention nearly as much as people think. Let me give you an example. I've got a friend who runs a store in Blacksburg, and sometimes recruits and their families come in when they're on their visits and things like that. So he's around them. Not so much these days because there's not as many guys visiting, but there was a few years ago, one of Tech's recruits, the guy had already signed with Tech, comes in the store, and I forget the exact quote of the kid, but basically the kid asked the question, are we in the same division as Clemson? Like, this was a guy who had already signed with Virginia Tech and had no idea who was in the Atlantic and who was in the Coastal Division. My point is, these recruits don't pay nearly as much attention as you think.
Right. So. And not to criticize the question, but the outcome of a single game just doesn't move the needle that much in recruiting. Recruiting is a relationship that is months long and years long, and a thing that happens on one given day. So you also have to ask the question, the flip side of that question is, do you think that the loss to Wake Forest lost Virginia Tech a bunch of recruits? No, I don't.
Right.
I don't think the flip side either. So.
I just want to say, I mean, Clemson, I mean, they've always been good. But Trevor Lawrence, I think we will look back at him playing in Lane Stadium the way we think, oh, remember when Brett Favre played in Lane Stadium? Yeah. Remember, I mean, the guy's going to be special for the New York Jets.
Didn't Tech beat Southern Miss in Lane Stadium?
They did, I believe, yes.
So, yeah, might want to.
In terms of great quarterbacks that have played in Lane Stadium.
All right, anyway, next question.
All right, we're running long, so we'll do one more from Stay Strong 101. not football related, but when will the podcast for basketball season start?
Well, there's been no media events.
No,
there is no schedule.
I was told 2 weeks ago that the schedule was coming out 2 weeks ago, and then I was told last week that the schedule was coming out last week. Neither happened. So I don't know when the schedule is going to get released, so I can't make plans for any future coverage for Virginia Tech basketball.
And in all seriousness, typically our basketball coverage would occur during a football off week, a bye week. There are none.
Oh, yeah, there is. Thanksgiving week, which is when basketball season starts. Yay, I thought I was going to get a week off during the season. No.
Okay. So anyway, don't know.
So to be honest with you, we run so much content that I don't know how I would have time to write a season. If basketball season started next week, I don't know how I would have time to write a season preview this week, right? So it might not be until that bye week, the week of the basketball season starts, until I write a basketball preview
article.
We will
probably need to outsource that to one of the students.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see.
I look forward to basketball coverage. It was a great
video.
We'll have
a better idea when the schedule is released.
I haven't even posted a roster on Tech Sideline, I don't think. It's up on HokieSports.com, but I haven't put one up on Tech Sideline. So,
Well, let me close with this, because I always have Twitter open for podcasters in case any Virginia Tech news breaks. Here's the news I'll leave with you. I know both of you enjoy the 70s sports Twitter account.
Of course.
Love it.
What if I told you that a Major League Baseball team has hired a manager who managed in the 70s as their manager for 2021?
What?
That is the news that is broken on Twitter. White Sox. I want you to get.
I'm trying to think who. What manager from the 70s is still alive?
We're taking big names here. I'm going to give you guys a guess. It was 1979 for the record.
Okay,
when he
so
managed
barely
this
in
team.
The 70s, but still.
This person is 76 years old. Last managed in 2011, the Chicago White Sox have hired Tony La Russa as their new manager.
He's that old?
How about
he
that?
Is 76 years old, and he managed the White Sox from 1979. To 1986. So, that's the news to close podcast. Nothing to do with Virginia Tech, but that is what's trending on Twitter. So, there you have it. All right. Quickly, make sure you're following Tech Sideline at Tech Sideline Facebook and Twitter. Make sure you're following Will and Chris on Twitter to have tweets during the game. Do you have Friday Q&A tomorrow on TechSideline.com?
Absolutely. As usual.
Fantastic.
Now, Malcolm, before we leave, has anyone noticed that Evan did not button his collars down on his shirt? No? I'm the only one who noticed?
Mm-mm.
I don't typically do the top button.
No, I'm not talking about the top button. I'm talking about
he said collars.
Collar.
Oh, you're right.
That's where you got to get married. You don't walk out of the house like that.
You know what's funny? So this is a shirt I haven't worn in a long time. I had my roommate help me. I was actually really struggling getting this button today, and I was like, oh, my gosh, my mom would be so disappointed in me.
Well, now she knows.
So your roommate was on top of you and didn't notice that the collar is
I'm going to blame this. Drew Claubert, who's watching right now. We got to have a chat. Gosh, well, thanks for calling me out on that. But I'll be better on Monday.
Now it's all fixed for the last 15 seconds.
There we go. But for the sign-off, if you're watching on YouTube, make sure you like and subscribe, please. And I will do better on Monday. With my collars all fixed. All right. Good Lord, Evan. All right. It must be the end of the show.
You have got to learn to handle the stuff that just comes out of nowhere, man. It's part of developing
yes.
And you do a good job. But I do that stuff to you on purpose because I care about your education.
I appreciate that. I have a story for another podcast of me and a we'll save that. We'll table that for another time. Anyways, thanks so much, everybody, for watching. And how about Mr. Strong for watching today and commenting? So appreciate him
watching.
Dorian
is the greatest football player ever.
There you go. All right, that'll do it for us. Episode 146 of the Tech Sideline Podcast. For our managing editor, Chris Coleman, our founder and general manager, Will Stewart, the best producer in the land, Malcolm Stewart, I'm your podcast host, Evan Hughes, saying so long. Thanks so much for watching and listening. Episode 146 of the Tech Sideline Podcast, brought to you by the Fisher Law Firm. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the game, and we'll talk to you on Monday morning, breaking down Louisville and Virginia Tech.